Eric Dawson's Talking Politics and Breaking Down the Issues. Coming to you live from Essex County, New Jersey, this is All Things Political.
This is Eric Dawson. Today is April 19th, Election Day in Newark, and I believe in Irvington as well for the school board election, and it is a primary day in New York City. So there's a lot going on, a lot at stake. Let's start with the discussion about New York. There's a primary going on, Democrat and Republican primary. Donald Trump is going to win by an enormous amount. And so there are some who believe that this may very well be the thing that sends him on his way to Cleveland, toward the nomination. There's still naysayers who believe they can block Donald Trump. I think if Donald Trump has the showing that he's expected to have in New York, it's going to be really difficult to stop the momentum. When you look at the fact that he's going to be going to Pennsylvania and Maryland and other states, it's going to be in Connecticut. It's going to be very, very difficult to stop Donald Trump. And so I think that Republicans are finally going to be faced with the reality of their worst nightmare coming true. But more importantly, at least for me, you know where I stand. I'm a Bernie Sanders supporter. Bernie is, you had different polls. You had several polls that had him down by double digits. I think one poll had him down by as many as 15 to 17 points. There was a poll yesterday that came out that had Bernie down by 6 points. The large crowds that Bernie Sanders is producing at his rallies are fantastic crowds. 28,000 one night, 25,000 in Washington Square Park, another 10 or so thousand and another outing. And so he has certainly shown, which is true, that his campaign has the momentum. I think it's very important for Bernie Sanders fans to really heed the language in what he's saying. When he says, I think we're going to do very well, I think we're going to be in good shape, he says, we have the momentum. It's important to really have a clear understanding of what that means and understand what the mainstream media wants you to think it means. And understand, again, that the mainstream media's number one job is to protect its interest, which is the establishment. So as they seek to drive a narrative, the narrative continues to be, and I want you to remember this, I mean, well before Bernie Sanders went on his eight contest victory streak, you had pundits saying that this was Bernie Sanders' swan song. Bernie Sanders was certainly done now in the South. He was getting trolloped, and so it's over. And they kept saying that, and Bernie kept pushing, and Bernie kept saying, I think we're going to do all right. I think we're going to do well. I think we're going to do well. Bernie Sanders right now, I don't believe he believes that he's going to have the number of delegates going into the convention to clinch the nomination. If he did believe that, I'd be concerned about Bernie Sanders' math and how he actually sees that playing out. I think, however, what Bernie Sanders is looking at is the fact that he can deny Hillary Clinton the number of delegates needed to clinch a nomination without going into a contested convention. Now, if you look at it, it'd be a fantastic thing for Bernie Sanders to win New York like he did Michigan. But if Bernie Sanders doesn't win New York, but if Bernie Sanders closes the gap to single digits, more importantly, I think if Bernie Sanders hovers around 5% in terms of losing, the proportional delegates will even out, so Hillary Clinton won't pull ahead of him in that respect. I think the things that happen, though, is perception and momentum and all of those things that Bernie Sanders talks about. Because Bernie Sanders started his campaign 48 points behind Hillary Clinton in New York. And if you look and say, well, the guy started 48% behind, and if he's catching her, that means that his campaign has momentum. And so when he says we have momentum, it's about showing that he's catching her. He ran out of time, most certainly, in the primary. But the idea is there is a November general. So the primary is now, but the general election is in November. So where you look and say, well, his airplane ran out of runway. No, it didn't. He's still taxiing, and he's picking up speed. So if you were to look at the two airplanes, you were to look at Hillary Clinton as an airplane, you were to look at Bernie Sanders as an airplane. Bernie Sanders is gaining, and Hillary Clinton is slowing down. And Bernie is saying to everybody, including these superdelegates, don't look at the primary as the end of the runway. Look at the general election in November as the end of the runway. And let's see who is moving at a faster pace and who is gaining momentum and gaining strength. And by strength, I mean independents, new voters coming into the process. All of those people are gaining, are part of Bernie Sanders' momentum, part of the strength that he's saying his movement, his revolution has. And the mainstream media doesn't want to talk to you about that. They want you to believe, and I'll get into why they want you to believe it, but they want you to believe that the end all will be at the end of this thing, and that when it's over, Bernie Sanders should forfeit. He should then tell his supporters that they should support Hillary Clinton, and then it should be done. The reason they want that is because as long as Bernie Sanders is raising money, and that too is part of his momentum, as long as Bernie Sanders is raising money, Bernie Sanders can stay in the race. He can stay all the way until June, and there are a lot of things that are plaguing Hillary Clinton right now. And those things that are plaguing her, she's concerned that the longer this thing draws out, the more attention and the brighter the light will be on these things that are currently plaguing her. So I hope Bernie Sanders wins, because that would be something else, right? But if you listen to the pundits say, oh, well, Bernie wins, won't be a big deal because they will split the delegates. Well, that's what I'm saying. If Hillary wins, they'll split the delegates. Now, something else to note, which I believe Bernie Sanders will talk about when he's talking, if he's not already having these conversations with these superdelegates. Take New York by itself. And I read an article online today. There was a gentleman who wanted to vote for Bernie Sanders. In fact, he, in the allotted time, attempted to switch his voting status from being a Democrat to being an independent, and he thought that he had accomplished that task. Well, when he went to vote, he was told that they lost his information. So he is unable to vote in the closed primary. So the whole idea, there are mixed views about a closed primary. And I'm trying to really, really be fair here. So the idea is a closed primary was originally put in place, or so it was said, so that one party could not hijack another party's primary. Here's an example of that. let's say Democrats want Ted Cruz to win the primary, the GOP primary, because Democrats would believe that their candidate might have a better chance of beating Cruz. So what would happen is you would have a lot of Democrats who would cross over and who would go and vote if it were an open primary. And they would all bullet vote for Ted Cruz so that Ted Cruz would win the nomination. And then they would switch back over to Democrats so that they could vote in the general election, and then they would have their candidate voting. So I mean, one could argue that the Republicans would do the same thing. So I believe that the initial intent was to ensure that there was some purity and that the people who had really intended to vote for this person in the general election had an opportunity to vote for them in the primary so that they would receive the nomination, right? So follow me now. So, again, I repeat that. If it's an open primary, the idea is the opposing party could go in and hijack the primary by switching over and voting for the person that they believe from that opposing party is the weakest candidate going against their candidate. And so you won't really have voters voting in an earnest way to ensure that the candidate that they really want to be president has a chance to get the nomination. So it's a little dishonest, I guess you could say. And so the idea of closing a primary was to ensure that if I voted for Bernie Sanders, that I truly want Bernie Sanders to be the nominee. And I want Bernie Sanders then to be on the ballot as the nominee in the general election, and then I would vote for Bernie Sanders to become the president of the United States. So that's kind of how it goes. But what has happened here is you have independents who are flocking to Bernie Sanders, and because of the closed primary, and in particular in New York, which has 3 million, I believe, voters, because the decision to switch would have had to have been made in October, it would have been difficult for somebody to foresee what's happening now, because you don't have the debates, right? Candidates in that early stage of a campaign are not necessarily releasing full plans, be they, you know, economic plans or domestic or foreign affairs plans. They're just not doing that. And so when you look and say, well, after being able to take a second and a third and maybe even a fourth look at Bernie Sanders, you as a voter, you say, you know, I want to switch, and I want to vote for Bernie Sanders. Well, you can't do that now. So you're stuck as an independent not being able to vote in this primary. And so now it hurts Bernie Sanders more than it hurts Hillary Clinton, because Bernie Sanders is picking up the independents, right? So the system that was supposed to work to ensure that you were voting for the person you wanted to see in the general election isn't working. And the person that millions of people, and so when Hillary Clinton says, well, she has millions more people who are voting for her or who have voted for her than have voted for Bernie Sanders, that is true, but it is only true in as much as these independents and other closed primaries were not able to vote for Bernie Sanders. So Hillary Clinton is not telling the complete truth. So she's telling a part of the truth, which is, yes, those people did vote. But if you were to ask the question, the intended votes, then you would get a different number. And so now Bernie Sanders will most certainly be shy millions of votes, maybe, potentially, in the New York primary, which is happening today. So here's the argument. Well, you know what? What I'm going to do is I'm going to take a commercial break. When I come back, I'm going to fill you in on what the implications of that are. So we're going to take a commercial break, and when we come back, we'll deal with that.
This is your dude, Spike Lee, and I know that you know the system is rigged. For too long, we've given up both the corporate puppets, sold the okey-doke. 99% of Americans were hurt by the Great Recession of 2008, and many are still recovering. And that's why I'm officially endorsing my brother, Bernie Sanders. Bernie takes no money for corporations, nada, which means he is not on the take. And when Bernie gets in the White House, he will do the right thing. How can we be sure? Bernie was at the March on Washington with Dr. King. He was arrested in Chicago for protesting segregation and public schools. He fought for wealth and education equality throughout his whole career. No flipping, no flopping. Enough talk. Time for action. Hey, Bernie from Brooklyn, talk to the folks.
I'm Bernie Sanders, Democratic candidate for president, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Bernie 2016, not the billionaire.
Hey, this is Eric Dawson. This is All Things Political. Today is Tuesday, April 19th. And as you already know, there's a primary going on for Democrats and Republicans in New York today and here in New Jersey, in North and in Irvington, there's a school board election. But we were talking in that first segment about the primary in New York and the implications of these independents not being able to vote for Bernie Sanders. And so, again, if you remember what I said in the beginning of the show, that you have to listen to the words that are coming out of Bernie Sanders' mouth. When Bernie Sanders says, we have the momentum, Bernie Sanders says that we're going to do very well. Bernie Sanders says, we're going all the way to the convention. So here's what it is. Bernie Sanders is calculating all of these independents who cannot vote for him right now. And Bernie Sanders is calculating that these independents will vote for him in November if he were on the ballot. Bernie Sanders intends to go to the convention and indicate to all of these superdelegates that the only reason that Hillary Clinton has more votes than him, and in fact, the only reason Hillary Clinton won some of the close primary states, was because these independents couldn't vote for Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders intends to have the evidence that shows his ability to be able to get the independents and Hillary's lack of being able to not only bring independents, but for all intents and purposes, bring new voters into the process. And so when we talk about this runway again, by the time we get to June or July, you will see that Hillary Clinton's campaign has completely sputtered, that she is kind of maxed out in terms of her outreach and her appeal, that her negatives will continue to be what they have been. And you'll see that the fight will be over whether or not, she can get the independents. So I believe that if Bernie Sanders continues to hold on, I believe that Bernie Sanders will win. In fact, I'm watching some of the exit stuff coming in. I'm not sure the polls are closed yet. No, the polls close in an hour and 40 minutes in New York. But they're talking about how Democratic Party is more energized, 68%. That's huge. That is massive. So, and then the final point that I'll say about Bernie Sanders is if Bernie Sanders does not receive the nomination, it is going to be a difficult task for him to get his supporters to move over to support Hillary Clinton. In fact, I read a statistic that said 25% or so of his supporters will not vote for Hillary Clinton. In fact, or a large percentage of those will flip and vote for Donald Trump. So it's a lot to think about as these parties start to try to finagle and figure out what they're going to do, whether or not they'd be willing to, for the sake of their darling candidate, concede the White House will be something that will be up for real debate by the time they get to Philly and the convention. So on to Newark. Actually, before we do that, I want to spend a couple minutes talking about Uber in Newark. Now, many of you know that there was a battle between Uber and the Taxi Cab Commission, and then Uber threatened to leave, and Mayor Ross Barak in Newark, threatened to ticket Uber drivers, and wanted Uber to capitulate to paying the fees that the Taxi Cab Commission pays for their medallions and such. Here is a very interesting thing. Well, and if you guys were paying attention to the headlines, you'll see that what wound up happening is the mayor was able to strike a deal with Uber and got Uber to pay $10 million, $1 million a year for 10 years. $1 million a year for 10 years. And so I got a couple questions about where that $1 million is going to go. You always have to kind of follow those things to figure out, what's going to happen. But I guess, yeah, I'm happy that the mayor was able to get some money from these guys. The manner in which he went about doing it was almost extortionist. Right, so you take the taxi cabs, and you complain about the fact that the taxi cabs are paying these exorbitant fees. And in fact, a lot of cab drivers, if not all of the cab drivers, rent their cabs. And someone told me that the fee to rent a cab is something like $400 a week to rent a cab. So these guys don't even own their cabs, and so now, where you say that, you're standing up and you're comparing Uber to the cab company, and you're also comparing the fact that Uber drivers don't have or don't get background checked, and you're talking, and I saw this, the mayor says that I put out salacious stuff, but what he put out was that, an Uber driver murdered, some people, or murdered a woman and shot some people. But what he didn't say was this Uber driver was not, yes, he was an Uber driver, so I'm not saying that he wasn't, but he didn't murder him because he was an Uber driver. And in fact, he didn't state that the guy didn't have a criminal record. So had Uber done a background check, the guy wouldn't have had a criminal record. So it wasn't a matter of the fact that Uber was negligent in some way. It's just like if somebody from Delta Airlines goes and murders somebody. Do we all of a sudden say, well, Delta hires murderers, if we shouldn't fly Delta? No, that person may not have had any kind of a record and went out and did that. So the mayor, did what he did. But here's the truth of the matter. Even with the deal that was struck, these Uber drivers will not be fingerprinted. So where the mayor put out this salacious piece of literature scaring the drivers and residents and hyping up the issue, these Uber drivers will not be they won't be fingerprinted. And so the mayor did get $1 million a year, but I think that that's small in comparison to what the taxi cab commission pays annually. But that's one thing. Here's the other thing. If I were a taxi cab driver, maybe this is a good thing. Maybe, you know, and I love Uber, by the way. I absolutely love it. Innovation keeps things fresh, right? You know, so with the taxi cabs now, having Uber as a competitor, the taxi cabs now have to face some serious concerns. The main one being, you know, you rent the cab for $400. It's $1,600 a month rental. You can buy a car, and I think Uber, your car has to be, you know, can't be older than 10 years. But you can buy a car, and you can drive your car, and you can pay your car off in, you know, in probably a year's time. In fact, or maybe a little bit more. But in fact, my daughter did exactly that. She bought a car for the express purpose of driving Uber. And she's able to pay down her student loan and pay her car note from what she makes on Uber. And then she has a full-time job. So her car note and her student loan is paid through Uber, and then she has her regular job. So if I were a taxi cab driver, I'd turn in my my medallion or whatever it is. I'd give them back their cab, and I would go and get myself a car that I would be able to use for my own pleasure during the, you know, the time that I'm not logged on to drive it as an Uber driver, and then I'd be able to drive it as an Uber driver. So I think that maybe these nasty, filthy cabs are finally, you know, going to see the end of, their life cycle, and will be ushered into this new age of shared rides. So I'm looking forward to that. Now, on to the election in Newark. And then there's something else I want to talk to you about too, but on to the election in Newark. Today is the school board election in Newark and in Irvington. I didn't pay much attention to the one that was going on in Irvington. I focused my attention this year on Newark, but you can believe that next year I will be keenly tuned in to what's going on in Irvington and as well as in South Orange, Maplewood. I'll be tuned in to what's going on there as well. So in Newark, what's been going on in the election in Newark is you had 12 total candidates that were running. And on another radio show that I do, School Matters, which I invite all of you guys to tune into, on School Matters, we focus on all things having to do with school. So we had 10 total candidate forums during the School Matters leading up to the election, and we had most of the candidates show up. There were some that didn't show up. I think Leah Owens didn't show up. Tave didn't show up. Dilla. Who else? There were a few more. Juan Silva didn't show up on the show, and then maybe there was another one. But we had some frequent callers in terms of the candidates. Kim Gaddy, Jody Pittman, Jimmy White, George Tillman showed up frequently. Tamara Moore showed up one show, and that was it. Sheila Montague showed up, and I believe that was it. But anyway, we had lively two-hour discussions for 10 weeks. And you had these different slates that are vying for the school board. One slate is the unity slate, which is Kim Gaddy It is Tave Padilla and Leah Owens. That is the Unity slate, which is backed by PC2E, which is an advocacy organization in Newark. The mayor and I guess, I don't know if it's just Enable Ramos, the North Ward councilman, or the entire North Ward machine that's backing that slate. Then you have, and I think that was initially the only slate, but as time went on, you saw multiple other non-sanctioned slates, show up. One of the slates was George Tillman went and created his own slate, which I believe was the local control slate. I believe that's what he called it. And George Tillman took Sheila Montague, he took Leah Owens, and he put them on literature, or somebody did, but I believe it was George because he has it posted on his Facebook page that he's done that. And then you have another slate, I don't know if it's called a Real Unity slate or something, which again wasn't sanctioned, but it was a piece that was done, a piece of literature that was done and passed around in the community. And that piece has, I think that piece has, who is it? It has Leah Owens, it has Jody Pittman, and it has Kim Gaddy on it. So there's a lot of shenanigans that are taking place right now in the city of Newark, and folks are trying to position themselves to get on the Board of Education. What I'll say to you is this. It is an important and a very, very important election, and I hope that anybody who's listening has gone out to vote and has cast their vote. I did not in this election endorse any candidates, but I did speak strongly about Kim Gaddy, because I thought that she was, just in terms of her background in environmental issues, was qualified to handle the issue that's facing Newark right now, which is the lead in the water. So I thought that she was most qualified. But what I will say is this. Whoever makes it onto the Board of Education, they have their hands full. And I'm eager this year to hold all of them to task in terms of the things that they promised to do if elected to the school board. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see, you know, how they actually keep their promises on the school board. Polls close at 8:00. My hope is that before the show is over tonight, we'll have some of the candidates call in. I know there were all kinds of things that were taking place during the day. There were folks showing up in the voting booths, in the actual voting booths, which is illegal, and showing people who to vote for. The actual rules to that are you should have a challenger from both camps or somebody from the election board go in with a challenger, to ensure that nobody is telling. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, not even a challenger can go in. I think it is just somebody from the election board. But I think you have to have two people from the election board show up or go into the actual booth. And they are just to instruct the people, how to vote, not who to vote for. My understanding is that at least on one occasion, someone was caught actually in the voting booth telling the person who to vote for. I'm hoping to get some calls in to find out if there are any additional shenanigans like that have taken place during the course of the day. But as I said, the Newark Board of Education has a host of issues, and I really don't know where you know, where to start, except to say that the idea of any candidate who is running and who wins, who ran on a platform of a moratorium on charter schools, you know, they're gonna have a rude awakening if they really want to go in and do their jobs. I will say that the three candidates who ran last year, Marquise Lewis, Dashe Carter, and Crystal Fonseca, to the best of my knowledge right now, have done very little, if anything, to advance the education trajectory in Newark. You know, so I'm looking at the folks who, like I said, who are running this time. I'm very, very concerned about whether or not they'll be able to do it either. And if they are, if they become obstructionists, it will be to the detriment of these children who desperately need these educational options and parents who are seeking them by the thousands, according to the waiting list of the school. So, I actually posed a question, but you know what? What I'm going to do is I'm going to hold this. I'm going to take another commercial break. When I come back, I'm going to talk to you about a question that I posed to one of the candidates on the show, and I'm going to give you what their response to me was. So we'll be right back when we come back from this commercial break.
I have spent my entire adult life looking for ways to even the odds, to help people have a chance to get ahead, to find the ways for each child to live up to his or her God-given potential.
I'm fighting for all Americans, not just some, for the struggling, the striving, and the successful. No matter who you are, what you look like, what faith you practice, or who you love, I am fighting for you. I'm fighting for everyone who's ever been knocked down but refused to be knocked out. I'm going to fight until every little girl in America knows she can grow up to be anything she wants, even President of the United States.
Dawson, welcome back to All Things Political. Today is Tuesday, April 19th, and as you already know, there's two elections in New Jersey, at least two that I know of. There probably is one in South Orange as well, but I do know about the Irvington School Board election, and I know about the Newark School Board election, but the big, center stage is the primary that's taking place in New York and in New York State. But on to what this candidate said to me during one of my interviews. I asked her, I said, well, what do we do in the event that, so I said, you want to have this moratorium on charter schools? And the candidate said, well, you don't even understand what a moratorium is. And I said, well, explain it. And so when she said it, it was clear that I already knew what it was. So they really just want to, for whatever the reason is, they want to put a hold on the expansion charter schools. So I said, well, while you do this, what's the plan? And so she said, well, then we have to figure some things out. We have to do some assessing. And I said, well, okay, but what we already know is that, there's failure, epic failure in the Newark public school system. We know that, right? And we know, for instance, North Star is an excellent school. We know that KIPP is an excellent program. So we know that, and we know that Newark traditional public schools are failing. And so now you want to stop the expansion of KIPP or North Star, and you want to examine what's wrong with traditional public schools. So I said, well, in the meantime, while you do that, what do you expect to happen to the kids who are there? Because you figure if you have a second grader or a third grader, by the time that third grader gets to the sixth grade, you still will not have figured it out. And so 3 years or more of that child's life will have been ruined while you try to figure out. When you have a parent who says, you know what, I figured it out. I know what to do. I want to take my kid and I want to move my kid over to a charter school. And you say, well, you know what, we don't want to give you that choice. What we want to do is we want to slow down the expansion of charter schools because we want to figure out why, you know, why our system's not working. Who wants to sacrifice their children for that? And so when you look at these board members who are going on to the Board of Education, I'm deeply concerned that if some of them go on to be obstructionists, it is going to be to the detriment of a lot of children in Newark. And I think that it will lead to a lot more issues. And so, you know, we'll see. But our hope here at All Things Political, as well as School Matters, is to pay very, very close attention and to hold them accountable. That's the goal. So now, the final piece that I'd like to talk about on the, you know, is the there's a headline that said Newark takes center stage at star-studded New York City Film Festival. So at the film festival, the Tribeca Film Festival, there was a which occurred on Sunday evening, there was a short documentary that was played in front of a star-studded audience. And the documentary was Newark on the Rise. And it depicted Newark moving forward under a Baraka administration. And it featured a lot of the things that are taking place downtown. It featured the downtown Whole Foods building, the Teachers Village development, the vertical farm in the Ironbound. It featured all of those things. But it didn't feature the inner part of Newark, right, the neighborhoods. And so I got to, you know, I mean, I don't know where the hypocrisy ends with this administration, because I will tell you that during former Mayor Cory Booker and current U.S. Senator Cory Booker's time as mayor, as he was working on developing downtown, I can tell you that this administration and many people who currently work for this administration may just continue to browbeat the former mayor and current U.S. senator because they said that he was ignoring the inner city, right, that he was focusing on downtown, but he wasn't providing the resources in the inner city. And so when I look and see that you have Mayor Ross J. Baraka, who now takes credit for all of these things and is happy to stand up on the stage at the Tribeca Film Festival and talk about how Newark is moving forward. Well, it was moving forward when these things were being done before. But you railed against that administration. And, you know, I mean, for me, you know, I just can't, and I won't let it go because I think that it is important for voters and certainly for my listeners to understand the hyperbole that takes place and the rhetoric that takes place during campaign season and the difference between that and governing. And hopefully, as we move to more local elections, we'll be able to discern the disingenuous discussion about what is and what isn't, and we'll get down to the meat and potatoes of what these people will actually do when they govern, because now we know that Ross Baratha would have done exactly what Cory Booker did, right? And so, you know, for him to, you know, create a platform that that misled constituents, you know, I just, you know, I think is, you know, and I just have a problem with it. People say it's politics, but I think it goes further than that. But anyway, the second part of this thing is that Baraka acknowledged that crime and outside perceptions about the city's safety remain obstacles, but he stressed that the city was succeeding in spite of any biases. I don't know where that is. I don't know, outside of the things that have been that were started under the Booker administration. I don't know what new things. I mean, there's some, you know, there's some little programs that the mayor has started, but nothing the magnitude of the things that he went to Tribeca Film Festival to talk about, and certainly none of the things that are in the documentary, right? The things he put in the documentary were things that had already been started, worked on by former Mayor Cory Booker. So, and this is the other piece, right? And I take issue, maybe because I was so intimately involved in that campaign. And as many of you know, prior to that mayoral campaign, you hadn't seen me because I wasn't involved in either of Mayor Booker's campaigns. I was not involved in any of Mayor James's campaigns. I was involved in the last mayoral campaign of the former mayor, Ken Gibson. That was the last mayoral campaign that I worked on before I worked on the Shavar Jeffries campaign. But when I worked on the campaign, I just listened to what Shavar had to say. And this isn't me pitching him right now. It's just me trying to get you listeners to understand the difference between hyperbole and campaign rhetoric and actual facts. There were many times where Shavar Jeffries was at a debate and he stated crime was the major issue. And if you could not resolve the crime issue, you wouldn't be able to attract new businesses to Newark. And Mayor Ross Baraka said that was nonsense. He said, look at Chicago. You know, look at the businesses that are in Chicago. Look at the crime that's there. Certainly we can attract business. Right? But now when you read this, it says that Baraka acknowledged that crime and outside perceptions about the city's safety remained an obstacle. So now he's acknowledging that it's an obstacle. And he, you know, but then he goes further to try to, you know, to sugarcoat it and say to say that, but we're making strides, you know, in spite of that. But that is not the case, and I think that it'll bear itself out in due time. Then the other piece that that was talked about at the film festival was gentrification, and the mayor said, no, we shouldn't. And I'm trying to read down into the article where he actually says it. The mayor also addressed fears about gentrification, pushing longtime residents out of the city, saying Newark had plenty of space to fit new residents without triggering displacement. And the newly introduced job training programs and affordable housing requirements would help ensure any new prosperity extended to all. Well, we know that that's not true. We know that that's not going to happen. We know that the less fortunate folks are not going to benefit at all. If Newark is going to make a turn, we know, example, that the and watch it. From the Whole Foods that's going to be in that Haynes building to the new ShopRite, that ShopRite is not going to turn out to be like the Pathmark on Bergen Street was, or the Pathmark on Lyons Avenue was. That ShopRite is a ShopRite that is going to be used primarily by residents of those new homes that are being built just behind the ShopRite, where a one-bedroom apartment is going for $1,500. That's right. You heard me, $1,500. And so when you look at Society Hill and you look at the income of those professionals in Society Hill, and then you look at the income level of the people who are going to be renting those apartments behind the ShopRite, they're not going to tolerate nonsense. They're just not going to tolerate it. And the beefed up security and or police presence in that ShopRite is going to make certain that it doesn't exist. And so we know that the criminal element, and in some cases, those who are not criminals, but they don't want to be eyeballed or they don't want to be profiled, they will steer clear of it. But you won't have in that area, you're not going to have, everyday Norkers moving in there. You're going to have professionals moving in those areas. And then you look at the North Ward, Forest Hill, you look down by Branchbrook Park around the corner over there, and then you look in the Wheat Lake section in the South Ward and the Clinton Hill section in the South Ward, which is also being rebuilt, right? So a lot of those homes are being purchased now, and they're going to be rehabbed, and you're going to have a different group of people living in those homes as well. All of that is changing, and the jobs program that the mayor talks about, how are you going to provide meaningful jobs to people who can't read? And so now we bring it full circle to this Board of Education election. How will you provide meaningful jobs to people who can't read? How are you going to do that? You're not going to be able to do it. These kids are failing. They're reading 3, 4, 5, 6 grades below level, and their math is horrendous. How are you going to do that? You're not going to be able to do it. So you will have gentrification. You will have, and, there are rumors of it now. I haven't been able to verify it, but folks talk about outsiders bringing the kids to attend, some of the prestigious charter schools in Newark. Well, they can't wait to get there, right, because they don't have to pay a tuition. So if you can make neighborhoods safe enough for people who value education to move their children and their families into Newark and attend these charter schools, that's exactly what you're going to have. You're going to have gentrification because now the market's going to go up. The real estate market's going to go up in Newark. And where are you going to push these people to? And, I can't imagine that you're going to have folks wanting to move into Newark and living in areas that are unsafe. And those unsafe areas are typically low-income areas. So I don't think that mixed-use thing is going to work out very well at all. So I don't know. I don't know what the mayor is talking about there. But we're going to see. We're going to see how things continue to develop, and we're going to see, whether or not he's able, to make good on his promise to have more things going on, as he indicated at the Tribeca Film Festival. Well, what I will tell you is there are 6 minutes left to go. In the polls will close in Newark, and we won't know for a while after the polls close, but there will be 3 new board members elected to the Newark School Board. But listen, before I end, I need to take this last commercial break, and then we'll be right back.
Everyone likes data, because when you have more data, you have more freedom. Freedom to do whatever. That's why AT&T is offering you 15 gigabytes for $100 plus $15 for each line. Because the more data you have, the more freedom you can enjoy. Freedom to post more memories, download more fun, and share what matters most with who matters most. 15 gigs of data for $100 plus $15 for each line at AT&T. What more could you want? I sure can't think of anything. AT&T, mobilizing your world.
Come in now and get the all-new LG V10, designed to capture, edit, and share high-quality video.
Pricing is monthly for service on smartphones on AT&T Next. Other pricing options available, overage monthly, and other charges and restrictions apply. See a store for details.
And all things political. The time is 7:55. We have, actually 7:56. We have 4 minutes left to go before the polls close in Newark, and I'm assuming in Irvington and South Orange if this school board election there as well. And I think we have an hour and 4 minutes to go before the primary polls close in New York City, and people will be waiting with be a breath to see the outcome there in New York as well. So, again, my hope was that during this episode we would get to talk to, a few of the candidates to find out how things were going on the campaign trail, but I'm assuming it's rough and tumble down to the last minute in the election. So I want to say again that I wish all of the candidates well, because I will be supportive to any candidate who is supportive of excellent educational opportunities for parents and for children. My goal is to next week, a week from today, we will start a citizens campaign for excellent education. So starting next week, I will take a couple days off, just a couple, and then I will be right back at it, and we will have 51 weeks from next Tuesday to elect the next 3 members to the Newark Board of Education Advisory Board. So 1 week off and then 51 weeks of hard work. And anyone who's willing to work with me will get it done. If I have to work by myself, we'll make that happen too. So I want to thank you all for listening and tuning in. I see that I had reasonable number of callers in on the switchboard. I hope the information I provided about the primary and the way that the closed primary and open primary system works, that you got some additional information about. And I know I just got an inbox. No, I didn't want to talk about Hillary Clinton's comment about hot sauce to Charlemagne on 105. I didn't want to have that conversation. But the way that closed primaries and open primaries work, how they disenfranchise people, how New York in particular disenfranchises because you have to switch party affiliations so early in the process without really having a full understanding of, who your candidate is, what they stand for, just when they're getting started. Anyway, I look forward to next week. Next week we plan to have Kerry Coley on the show. Kerry Coley is a candidate running for the mayor in the township of Orange. We've had currently seated mayor Dwayne Warren on the show. We've had Janice Morrell, who's also running for the seat of mayor in Orange. And now we're going to be we're going to be bringing Kerry Coley to you as well. So it should be a very, very exciting show. So I would ask you all to tune in next Tuesday, same time, to All Things Political. See you then.
You've been listening to Eric Dawson talking politics and breaking down the issues. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. for All Things Political.